Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 53 of the Ambitious Freelancer Podcast. Today I'm joined by Javasia Harris-Bowser, who is a freelance journalist who also writes blog posts, newsletters, and other content for small businesses, corporations, and nonprofits. Her work typically focuses on women's empowerment, and she is an amazing freelancer based out in Birmingham, Alabama. So I've been following Javasia online for a little while now, and I love her brand and what she is all about and how she grows it through personal branding. So I wanted to chit-chat with her about her experience creating that personal brand and how she uses it to get clients, also talking about her health journey this year and all kinds of things. So if you guys are interested, keep listening because I know that you'll enjoy Javasia's insights. So let's get started. Hi, Javasia. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast.
Hello, and thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, I've been following you and your business for a while, and so I'm super excited to chat about everything that you do with CJ and Wright and all the amazing things that you do with your personal life and with your professional life. So, but to get started, before all of that, can you let my audience know who you are and what kind of freelancing you do?
Yes. So my name is Javasia Harris-Bowser, and I am a freelance writer based in Birmingham, Alabama. And I do all types of freelance writing. I am a freelance journalist. So I write for both print and digital publications, local, regional, some national. And then I also do some freelance writing for small businesses, corporations, and nonprofit organizations, doing things like helping them with blog posts or newsletters or research reports. You know, they have a lot of nonprofit organizations have a lot of data that they need to get out to their stakeholders, but they need stories sort of wrapped around that data so that it makes sense to the layperson. So I help with that as well. And I also do a little bit of freelance editing. So here in Alabama, there is an organization called Alabama Media Group, and that organization puts out the major newspapers in our state. And recently they started a new platform called Reckon Women, and it's all about elevating the voices of women in Alabama. And so I have been charged with helping solicit, select, and edit content for that platform as well.
Awesome. That's some really great stuff. Those are all like really cool opportunities and things like that. And especially just, you do a lot. You have a lot going on. But it's really cool. And one of the things I really like to talk about, because I've said this a million times on my podcast, I live in like the smallest town. But I really love talking about people and their like local freelancing journeys, because I think it's so interesting when people are able to connect with so many companies in their like local area and really make it work for them. So I know that you do a lot of work, as we've seen, in Birmingham, Alabama. So I wanted to dive into that for a bit. So I know that your story kind of started in Louisville, Kentucky, and then you kind of moved back to Birmingham, Alabama, which was your hometown, I'm assuming?
That's correct.
So how did you kind of tap into that local market, like once you moved back into town?
Sure. So when I was in Louisville, I was a full-time newspaper reporter, and I moved back to my hometown of Birmingham, I guess in 2009, and I moved back to teach because that was something that I'd always wanted to do. And a great opportunity came up to teach at my old high school, actually. I went to a performing arts school, kind of like Fame, or if you're too young to know Fame, it's like Glee. I got an opportunity to teach there. And so that's why I moved back to Birmingham. But I knew that I wanted to continue to write in some capacity. So once I got sort of settled in my teaching job, I reached out to one of the major magazines here. I just emailed the managing editor and invited her for coffee. And during that meeting, I, you know, told her more about myself, told her about my experience as a reporter, also got a sense of what she felt like the magazine was missing. And then after that, I pitched some ideas to her, and she also had some ideas in mind that she thought would be a good fit for me. And so that was how that started. And so that's one of the things I always tell people who are trying to break into freelancing is to just make those connections with editors, just build those relationships. So that's how it started. But honestly, after that, all the other opportunities I've gotten have actually, the editors have actually come to me. And that happened because I started to build buzz for myself through C. Jane Wright. So C. Jane Wright is a website and a membership community for women who write and blog. And I started that in 2011. So that was 2 years after I moved here. And honestly, I started for selfish reasons. I just wanted a community of women writers to hang out with, and I couldn't find one, so I created one. But through that organization, I started hosting events and doing all these workshops and programs, and people were talking about it. It was getting a lot of attention, including getting the attention of editors. And so editors started to reach out to me asking if I wanted to freelance for their publication, and then businesses started reaching out to me, asking me to freelance for them. And so really, most of my opportunities have happened just because I've built a buzz about myself. And so my biggest opportunities have come because of that. I had the opportunity to have my own column in two magazines. The opportunity that I mentioned earlier with Alabama Media Group and Brecken Women, that they came to me for that too. And so again, it's just about sort of building your personal brand and building buzz around your personal brand.
Yeah, so I know that that's something we're going to talk about a little bit later, but since you mentioned like personal branding, I really love that about you and how you are able to balance it well. I know that a lot of freelancers struggle with that, the need to be a personal brand, but also the need to like get client work done. So how do you kind of balance between building your own brand and working with clients?
I don't know that I have a secret for that. You know, I just kind of do it. I always keep a running list of things that I need to work on, whether that's freelance articles for media publications, whether it's the work for clients, whether it's things for my personal brand or for C. Jane Wright. And so I think it's just being very meticulous about planning my day. So C. Jane Wright members know that I have this thing that I call the Sunday Slay. And so every Sunday, I spend like almost an hour planning out my week. And so basically what I do is I write down all the stuff that I want to do and need to do and have to do that week. And then I kind of just go through my planner and decide what day I'm going to do what thing. And then I plan out hour by hour what I'm going to do on Monday. And then on Monday night, I would plan out hour by hour what I'm going to do on Tuesday. So I think by keeping that running list and being meticulous about each day, that helps me just get things done. And it helps me make sure that I'm always working on the things that I need to be working on. So,
yeah, those are all really great tips. I think that hourly tracking is something I definitely need to get a little bit better at. But I just like how you've been able to do that really well, because I think that it is really challenging when you're starting to really see like you're so in the weeds of like working that it's hard to like see the bigger picture sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I just like that you have the lists and then you were able to fit it throughout the week, and I love those tips. So how would you like, what tips would you give for a freelancer who wants to build their own personal brand to start that personal branding process, I guess?
I think that one thing that's important is to kind of niche down a little bit. And so what I mean by that is, for me, you know, I'm sort of known as the, I'm all about empowering women. So like almost everything that I do is somehow connected to that. And so because of that, when people have something in mind that's about uplifting women and has writing or blogging or content creation connected to it, I'm the person that comes to mind. So like the Alabama Media Group Wrecking Women thing, I was the person that came to mind because I am known as the woman in town who's always trying to encourage other women to write and to share their stories. And so it just made sense. There is a company that I do some freelancing for, and it's a financial advisory company, but they are really working on this mission of empowering women to just be better educated about their financial planning. And so when they needed content for that, I was the person who came to mind. So, you know, figure out that thing that you sort of want to be known for and really push that. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't do other stories. You know, I'll do stuff about random things too. But I'm sort of well known for my drive, my values of elevating women's voices. And so because of that, I'm the person that comes to mind when people need something related to that.
Yeah. So another thing, just kind of branching off of being top of mind and understanding and like working with a bunch of editors. I know you work with a bunch of editors. So how do you kind of keep those relationships like happy, I guess, or how you like, you know, reach out and, you know, keep up with all of the editors you are in contact with?
Yeah. So a couple of things. I think one, it's important to always have ideas. So I'm fortunate enough that a lot of the editors that I work with, they will come to me with ideas, but not all of them. Some of them never come to me with ideas, or they come to me very rarely with ideas. And so I've got to make sure I have ideas of my own to constantly pitch to them so that I am staying top of mind. Also, you've got to just learn your editors and know what they want and what makes them happy. Like, for example, I have one editor, she is very hands-off. Like, she's gonna give me an assignment and then she's kind of like, bye. You know, like she doesn't really need to hear step-by-step of, oh, I scheduled this interview or I took these pictures or blah, blah, blah. She doesn't care about any of that. She just wants the finished product. However, I have another editor who is the complete opposite of that. He wants constant communication. If he texts you and you take too long to text him back, he'll freak out. You know, you've just got to kind of know the personality of your editor and work with that.
Yeah, I love those tips. And I also just love the fact that you are saying to pitch, because I feel like that's something that people get concerned about. Like if they're not getting actively pitched, that it's like a problem that they pitch people. And I think that's just a part of like the entire process. It's because people are busy. I have some clients who don't just come to me automatically about ideas and things they want to talk about in their businesses, but that doesn't mean that they're not interested or they're not thinking of me. It's just like they're too busy and they're like forgetting to email. So it's good to step up as a writer to be like, hey, I have this idea, do you want this for your business? It's okay to do that.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, I was talking about more media publications, but even with the businesses that I write for, it's the same thing. Like I will reach out to them and say, hey, like, what are we going to do this month? If you don't have any ideas, here's some that I have based on what I know you're focusing on this month. And so, yes, don't be afraid to pitch.
Yeah. So kind of going back to your like Alabama experience, kind of did a little caveat. But yeah, I want to talk about your speaking engagements, because I think that's just a really great way to grow your business, especially if you're a freelancer, to get in front of people, to talk with people and have that kind of experience. It builds your expertise. So can you talk about like how you got into speaking gigs in general and like why you decided to get into them?
Yeah. So again, this is something that sort of happened because I built Buzz for myself through C. Jane Wright. So because of C. Jane Wright, people started coming to me wanting me to speak at their conferences or their meetings or workshops, typically about blogging, because I love to blog and I help other people with blogging. And so people wanted me to talk to them about that. Then that sort of shifted into people wanting me to talk about just sort of personal brand building and that sort of thing. So again, I built buzz for myself. And so people started to come to me, and that's how that happened. And initially I was speaking for free, because I didn't really know that people got paid to speak. And then, and then I figured out that people do get paid to speak. And so now I also get paid to speak, which is nice. But I would say, for someone interested in getting into speaking, to first kind of figure out a couple of signature talks. And that's basically like the thing that you can kind of always talk about. Obviously, you'll tweak it for your audience, but it's a topic based on your experience, your expertise, that you know that you can talk about. And, you know, and talks should have facts and a little bit of statistics, but not a lot, because people don't remember that stuff and they don't really care about that stuff at the end of the day. At the end of the day, they want to know your story. So always think about what compelling stories you can use to help convey the information that you're given. So I would say, you know, figure out your signature talks and then just start pitching yourself to conferences, to organizations that have regular meetings, because most organizations that have regular meetings also want speakers for those meetings. So just start pitching yourself. And if everybody keeps telling you no, then host your own events. Because like I said, I got the attention of people because I was hosting my own events. And so if you start doing that, people are going to eventually start coming to you.
Yeah. So, I have kind of two directions I want to take it. but first, I guess you can talk about hosting events. Like, how do you, like, where's the starting point of that? Like, how do you what advice do you have for freelancers who want to, like, start hosting events? Like, how do they reach out to people? How do they start starting small or big or however that works, I guess? A lot of stuff.
I would definitely recommend starting small, unless you have a lot of sponsors behind you and you can start big. But if you don't, and you're, feel free to start small. I certainly did. And, you know, just decide what kind of event that you want to have. Is it just going to be sort of a mixer for other freelance writers, or do you want to do a workshop or panel discussion or whatever? Just decide what it is that you want to do. And then just kind of go from there. And there are a lot of free or low cost resources out there. Like, you can host events at libraries, and that doesn't cost very much. And as far as getting the word out, I always use social media, of course, and local event calendars. And also for bigger events, I will go on television as well. So I'll go on like the local talk show or whatever and promote the event that I have coming up.
Awesome. So one of the bigger speaking engagements I know you did was your recent TED Talk for TEDx Birmingham. So can you talk about like how that experience was and what the preparation was like for that?
Yeah, so that experience was great. I've been obsessed with TED Talks for years. So to do a TEDx talk was really a dream come true. I had attended every single TEDx Birmingham prior to my talk, which was in 2018. And the preparation process was a lot. I think a lot of people don't realize that. They think that the people who do TED Talks just kind of, you know, the week before, they're like, oh, I'm going to do this talk and let's figure out what I'm going to talk about. And they practice a couple times and then they get on the red circle. And no, that's not, it was months of preparation, having the organizers read through drafts and doing lots of edits of the draft of the talk. And then after you've got the actual text down, then it's the practicing, and you're practicing in front of focus groups and the organizers and the other people who are going to be talking that day. And so it's a lot, but I really enjoyed the process. I felt like it made me a better writer, because that revision process that we did for the talk is the same kind of revision process that we should be doing for our writing if we really want to get better at our craft. So I really, really enjoyed the process.
Awesome. That's really cool. I also love TED Talks, and I just think it's such an interesting thing. And I watched your TED Talk, and it was so interesting to have it. And that's probably a great reel for your speaking engagements too. So, yeah, it's just really cool to see that. Like, you don't get to see that often, but yeah, that's really awesome that you did that in your freelance and promoting your freelance and promoting your personal brand. So, I guess the next thing I want to talk about is just going through your archives, because you have a really great blog on your website. And I was kind of reading a few of your posts, and one caught my attention about like having a 5-year plan for writers. So why do you think that's important, and what are some kind of tips for creating that plan in a way that makes sense for your writers?
Yeah. So the reason I think having a 5-year plan is important is because, I mean, if you think about if you're getting in your car about to go somewhere and you pull out your phone and you want Siri, I have an iPhone, to give you directions. So Siri cannot give you directions if you don't tell her where you're going, right? Yeah. And so it's the same thing with our goals and with our life. If we don't know where we're going, we're not going to know what that next step is. And we're going to say yes to everything. We're going to end up doing a lot of stuff that we don't really want to do. We're going to waste a lot of time. And so if you have a plan, then it just gives you direction. It tells you like what things you should be focusing on this year and the year after that. And it really helps you with clarity. And as far as how to develop that plan, and to be clear, of course, a 5-year plan is going to change because our priorities change. Unexpected things may happen. Like you may have, you know, a health issue that changes things for you. You may have a baby, you know, so all these things can happen. So obviously a 5-year plan can change. But the point is just to have that direction so that you're not wandering around aimlessly through life. So as far as how to develop that plan, there are two things I would recommend. There's a coach that I worked with a few years ago, and she would take her clients through this vision writing process where you're basically kind of writing a vision for your life. And it was a really intense involved process, but and you don't have to do all of that, because I mean this is something that took like months to do, but a shortened version of it would be just kind of set a timer for like 30 minutes and allow yourself to free write to this prompt. It is 2025, so that would be 5 years from now, and I am so proud of the life I have created. And so then you just write for 30 minutes describing every part of your life. So not just your writing life, but every part of your life, because it all intertwines. And you're writing it as if it is your reality. And so you just describe what that life is going to be like, every area of your life. If that's overwhelming for you, because when my coach told me to do that, I was kind of overwhelmed by that idea. So what I did is I actually just wrote out, I describe what my ideal day would be like. And in doing that, I touched on like all the different areas of life. And so from that, so that gives you a vision of what you want your life to look like in 5 years. And so from that, you pull out goals, and those goals are basically the things that you need to do so that your life will look like that in 5 years. If that is too complicated for you, another idea, and this is something that I encourage the women of CJ and Wright to do, is just write your future writer bio. So we were talking about speaking engagements earlier. So let's imagine that you're about to give a talk at a big conference and someone's going to introduce you. What do you want them saying about you when they introduce you? So write your future bio and then kind of use that as the vision. And then again, you're going to take that bio and ask yourself, okay, what are the things I need to do over the next 5 years so that this will be my reality in 2025? And so those become your goals. And so that's what you start working toward.
Those are all some really great advice and tips. I love the prompts and things like that you gave. I think that's going to help a lot of people kind of understand that, because you think about it, like 2025 is not even that far away. It seems so far away, but it's not.
It's not at all.
And just when you said that, I was like, oh, wow, that's not far at all. But it seems like you can do so much in 5 years, though, even if it's not that far away. Like, there's so much that can change. Things can change in like a year. So I think it's just really, I think it's really cool to have like kind of those longer term plans. I think that people don't think about it enough, but like you have to kind of have like the bigger picture kind of figured out too, even if like you kind of want to live in the moment, because like you said, like you can, you'll waste so much time and just do anything because you don't have any plans or goals or things in mind. So I love those tips. Another thing I want to talk about is your CJ and Walk post, because I've been seeing that a lot on your Instagram feed and on your Instagram stories, and I really like it because I know for a lot of freelancers it's really hard to get that activity happening because we're working from home or however we're working, coffee shops or whatever, but we're working on the computer a lot, so we don't get a lot of like activity. So can you tell me a bit more about like that experience and why you decided to go on that journey?
Yeah, so what Amanda is referring to is I decided that this year in 2020 that I am going to walk every single day, walk for exercise. So not like walk around my house in my pajamas, but like put on my workout clothes, my tennis shoes, and walk every single day for exercise. So for 366 days. And so far I've stuck with it. And I decided to do this because I have this extreme personality, and this probably isn't good. I probably should talk to my therapist about this, but I'm sort of an all or nothing kind of a girl. Like, fitness has always been important to me. When I was in college, I even taught fitness classes at my university's gym. So, and I used to do half marathons and all this stuff. Fitness has been very important to me. However, as I've gotten older, I've had some health issues that make it difficult for me to do a lot of the high impact stuff that I used to do. And as you get older, you get busier, especially when you're working for yourself. You know, some people who don't live this freelance life imagine that we're all just like chilling on the beach all the time. And we know that's not true. Yeah. We know that we work really hard all the time. And so, you know, as I've gotten older, I've just gotten busier. And so it's really easy to put fitness on the back burner because you've got all this stuff to do. And when you're trying to fit it all in, it's easy to say, oh, well, I'll just skip the gym today. And so, you know, normal people will say like, okay, I'm going to try to work out 3 to 5 times a week. That doesn't work for me because what will happen is Monday I'll be really busy and I'll say, well, I can work out tomorrow. And so Tuesday will come and it'll be really busy and I'll say, I'll work out tomorrow. And I'll keep doing that. And then the whole week has gone by and I haven't worked out. So I have to give myself an extreme challenge. It's just how I am. I'm not saying everybody needs to do this, but it's just how I am. And back in 2014, I challenged myself to exercise, do some sort of exercise every single day in the for the year. And I did it and people found out about it. And I was even on a talk show about it. But so this year I'm challenging myself to walk every day. I picked walking because walking is something that can be as easy or as hard as you want it to be. So, you know, I can, that way I don't risk injuring myself by doing this every day. So if I need to, you know, take it easy, I can do like a really light leisure walk. Or if I'm really trying to like burn some calories, I can do race walking, which is, you know, walking super fast, like to the point where it almost looks like you're jogging. Or I can go to the gym and walk on the treadmill really fast and even increase the elevation really high. So it's like I'm, you know, walking up a hill. So that's why I picked walking, because it can be as hard or as easy as you want to make it. And I'm walking every day because I have an extreme personality. That's how I do. So my advice to you, you don't have to walk every day, but you've got to make it a priority. And if challenges like the one I'm doing, if that works for you, then find some kind of challenge to be a part of. Like maybe do Fitbit challenges or, you know, something. But mainly it's good to find stuff that you actually enjoy doing. You know, like if going to the gym, being on the elliptical makes you want to stab yourself, then don't do that. You know, find some fun like dance aerobics classes to do, or, you know, find some DVDs that you can do at home if you don't have a gym membership. Like, just find stuff that's actually going to be fun for you, because that's going to increase the chances that you'll actually do it. But you've just got to make it a priority. And I know that's really hard to do. But, you know, when you're a freelancer, you're a business owner, and your business is only going to be as healthy as you are. So,
yeah, that's all really great advice. So I kind of made a move kind of into your own, we've talked about kind of CJane right throughout this entire thing, but can you kind of tell me a little bit more about CJane right and how that got started and all that?
Yeah, so CJane right, I started in 2011. It was not meant to be a business. I just wanted some women writers to hang out with. So I basically reached out to all of these women writers that I found online. I didn't even know them. And I just said, like, hey, I want to start this group for women writers. Want to meet me for tacos? and so 12 women showed up, these 12 women that I didn't even know. And we started talking just about our writing projects and things like that. And then while we were there, someone was talking about Twitter and how important Twitter is to writers. And most of the women there were like, what? Twitter's dumb. What are you talking about? But they were willing to learn. And so they turned to me and they said, hey, can our next meeting be a workshop on Twitter? And I was like, oh, crap, they want a next meeting. I hadn't thought about that. But I gave them what they wanted. We had a workshop on Twitter about, you know, how to use Twitter as a writer. And 40 people showed up. And then after that, we did a panel discussion on blogging, and about 75 people showed up. So I was like, okay, I'm on to something here. But like all of this, and so I kept hosting these events for 2-3 years, not charging for any of them, paying for everything out of pocket. And my husband was like, bruh, this is turning into a very expensive hobby. And so I figured I needed to at least break even so that I wasn't draining our savings account. So I turned it into an LLC so that I could start charging for stuff. And then I created the membership program. And then it just kind of exploded, because it started out as just this local thing. But all of these people outside of Alabama, even outside of the United States, started finding out about it, and they wanted to become members. So so then I added a virtual component. So we have a lot of virtual workshops, virtual meetups, virtual critique sessions, and all of this stuff. So, and as a member, you get access to all of those virtual workshops and critique sessions and write-ins. We do some virtual write-ins as well. And also I have this sort of resource library that's just for members. And so so now, you know, I have members who are here in Birmingham, of course, but then I also have members in California and you know, Ohio and Barbados, and it's just kind of crazy. New York, like I have members all over the place now, which is crazy, but awesome. And I still have some in-person events in Birmingham too, because my Birmingham Janes, they love to hang out with each other. So I still have some in-person Birmingham events, but we mostly what we do is virtual now, because I have members all over the world. One of the things that I want to start doing is in-person events in other cities. So kind of going to other cities where I have a good concentration of members and having events there. And I started that a little bit last year. I did a meetup in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. but that's like just up the road from Birmingham. So I'm hoping to do some stuff in Montgomery, Alabama, and then eventually do some stuff outside of the state of Alabama. One day I hope to even do something in Barbados because we have a member who lives in Barbados, and I just feel like it would be awesome to have a sojourning right event in Barbados, because why not?
Yeah. Awesome. I'm so excited about that. Like, it seems like a really great community of women, and I'm in like the free Facebook group I joined a few days ago. And it just seems like such a really great community. And I'm so excited that you started that community of people, because I think we need that, especially women need that, because it's really hard to get started. Even with freelancing, you think that, you know, the internet levels playing fields, and it does for sure, but it's still, you need community of people.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So to finish this up, can you let my audience know where they can find you online?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Facebook group that you just mentioned, and that Facebook group is open to anybody, so you don't have to be a paid member. If you just go to Facebook and search for Sojourning Right Network, you will find that group. You can find our blog and website at sojourningright.net. And you can find me on Twitter, even though I don't tweet that much. But you can find me on Instagram. I am on Instagram a lot. And if you want to follow my Sojourning walk, you can follow that in my IG stories. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CJavasia. Right.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So there you have it, another episode of The Ambitious Freelancers in the books, and I'm so excited about this episode with Javasia. She is such a smart individual, and she has so much insight, and I just love chatting with her, and I hope that you guys got out just as much insight as I did, because I definitely took away some gems. That five-year exercise she gave was so amazing, and I'm definitely doing it for myself, so I hope that you guys love this gem of a podcast, and yeah, that's pretty much it, you guys. I will see you guys next week with another special interview, and I'm just so excited about how this podcast has been forming recently, and hope that you guys are seeing the excitement that I'm feeling in this podcast. So yeah, I'll talk to you guys very soon. Bye.